you know, there might be 50, 55, 58, 60, like I may never work again. And not like a good thing, but like I may never be hired again. And I might have to take a huge step down. And I might have to take a huge cut in pay, and I'm the sole breadwinner. And I was just like, this is insane.
Financial independence,
freedom,
financial picture,
independent financially,
financial future,
financial freedom and wealth,
financial independence,
get your fill, financial independence and long life. Welcome to another episode of Get Your Fill, Financial Independence and Long Life, where we explore ways to achieve those two goals and we invite people on to help us. And today's guest is absolutely perfect. Cameron Hubbard is, she's like everything I started this podcast about, because she is committed to helping women over 50 to make extraordinary change. She is an executive leadership and personal development coach, and she hosts a podcast called 50, Not Dead. Right? Cameron, thank you so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me.
So, Cameron, why do you think 50 is such a big deal for us, for women? And I mean, maybe for men, who cares what they're going through at this moment? Let's only talk about why is it such a big deal for women?
Oh, my goodness. Well, that is, I have been doing a lot of research around this, and I have talked to lots and lots of women. But there is like some stuff that goes way back that is really kind of instrumental in how we do look at this age, right? It's not just our society. It's kind of a global phenomenon that happens with women across all societies. And you can look, some people believe that it is, you know, it has to do with the number of moon cycles you have had and all of this stuff, which I had never really known about until, again, I've just talked to a lot of people. But from my perspective, and from the perspective of most of the people that I speak with, when you hit 50 as a woman, you have likely been giving of yourself for the last 30 years, maybe longer. And giving of yourself for what your, you know, employer expects of you, maybe what your parents thought you should do when you went to college, maybe what they expected of you when you started out your career, what your, you know, people expected of you, the opportunities you did or did not have of your career. Maybe you had children, and so then you were potentially a working mom, or you had to leave the workforce. Maybe you wanted to, maybe you didn't. And then maybe you returned to the workforce or you stayed in it, and you're trying to do all these things. And at this stage, at 50, you might also be sandwiched in taking care of aging parents. Kids might be most likely not breastfeeding. They might be at home. They might have left the nest. But we have enough lived experience now that at 50, it is this, I believe, like this culmination of experience where you kind of take a pause and you're just like, oh my God, you know, I'm 50. Have I done what I thought I was going to do? Am I who I thought I was going to be? And there's a sense of urgency that comes because that kind of naturally comes. Because especially historically, I mean, there wasn't a lot of time left. Now there is much more time left. But I think that we're still kind of breaking through that thought process of like, okay, I'm 50. And if I haven't done what I was going to do, or if I'm not who I wanted to be, like, well, if not now, when?
Yeah, absolutely true. And also, I think from a societal perspective, I mean, maybe this is sort of, I think, primitive, but I think because we're pretty much not, we're leaning away from our childbearing years. So, you know, maybe there's less reason for society to look at us, right? From when you think about it, like prehistorically or whatever, right? Mm-hmm. When you think of it from a really, really instinctual, I guess, perspective, like, oh, that person is not going to help us propagate the species anymore. So they're no longer relevant. I mean, I think a lot of us, that's one of the reasons that we're shouting is because like, hello, just because I have gray hair doesn't mean I'm not powerful and relevant and even more important than ever. But what you're saying is absolutely true too, because suddenly a lot of times you have now time to think about your own life, right? The kids don't need you every single day. And, you know, you're at a point where you're And also hormonally, right? We're also changing and, you know, become more testosterone. We're like, you know, hey, look out, man. I'm not happy and you need to hear about it, right? So there's just so many, like, it's like a snowball effect of all these different things that are happening to us. And we're just like, you know, what did I give up my life for you? You're not nice. You know, what was I thinking?
I had that conversation with a friend just the other day. She's like, I give my best years of my life. And conversation with her is like, no, it can still be really good.
Yeah.
Don't despair. But yeah.
So what kinds of things are women looking for when they first come to talk to you? Why do they seek you out?
Oh, you know, there are various reasons. So I would say one of the most common reasons is people come to a leadership or an executive coach. If they are in corporate, it is likely that they are fed up with the potential lack of upward momentum that they're seeing or opportunity that they're seeing, right? And they're so frustrated by seeing people younger than them get promoted over them, often men, when they have this huge skill set, right? Like this huge skill set, really broad and deep experience in many, many areas. And they're just like, this is not working. I don't understand why, you know, or I understand from, like, again, societally, it's just like, yeah, I'm old now and I'm being passed over, which can really get dark and dangerous quickly, because then it's like you internalize all that shit and you're just like, oh, I am old, or maybe I am out of touch. So they'll come to me in that kind of case to be like, okay, I need to make a change, whether it is, you know, God damn it, I want to be promoted. Help me figure out, what am I not seeing? You know, what am I not seeing in terms of how I'm communicating, how I'm presenting? Am I owning the room? Am I using my voice in the best way? And they may not say those exact questions, but that's kind of what we'll pull out. And so then we might go that path, you know, of really like, okay, let's really look at the situation, do a deep dive in any feedback you've ever had, any opportunities you've ever had, and then see what we can do, because there are often things that we can do. It may be that I just said there are often things we can do. It may be, though, that your company just has a bias against women over a certain age. It might be 40, right? You might not even make it to 50 before you start having this feeling at work. And then help them discern, you're probably not going to change that company, you know, and you know, whether it is if it's a big corporation, unless you can rally all of the women, you know, and really make a stance and, you know, get some media attention behind you, or if it's privately owned, then if somebody has a, you know, very ingrained opinion, you may not be able to change it. But again, the hard part then, it's like, it can be so crushing to somebody's self-esteem and self-worth that then I really work on helping them kind of see where the company ends and where they begin, because you can get really enmeshed in that feeling of, oh my God, I know that I'm worthwhile. I bring stuff to the table, but they're not seeing it. And I'll just work harder. I'm going to keep my head down. I'm just going to work harder and harder and harder. So they're totally exhausted. And then their self-esteem does kind of dwindle. It's like, well, like I said, maybe they do kind of feel like, oh, maybe I'm not as good as I thought, you know? And then it's like, okay, let's discern what is you and what we can do and what is the company, and really put that back to the company. Put the, you know, BS stuff back to the company. If that's how they want to be, you're not probably going to change it. So then let's look at your transferable skills, because often we have them and we may have an idea of like, I think I can probably do this in another industry or for another business, but I really don't know because I've been doing this in this industry for 20 years. So then I might help them be like, oh, actually, you know, when somebody else looks at you, it's like, oh, well, I actually know that if you can do this, I know for sure that it is transferable because I've seen that happen. Or I might just say, I think if you can do that, that probably means that you can also do this and this and this. And they will often be like, well, yeah, of course. I didn't even think of that as a skill, because it's just what I do. And so then we can get really clear on that. And then it may be, okay, they may want to exit the company. And then we look and see like, okay, well, where is a company that may have be more aligned with you, and where you, maybe it is smaller, maybe not, where you can have more of an impact, or maybe you have always dreamt of starting your own thing. And so it's, you know, the reasons are kind of wrapped up in a kernel. It's just where that, you know, usually it's like, okay, I'm stuck and I believe it is potentially age driven. What do I do? And then the pathways out, there are several paths that we can explore. Does that make sense?
No, absolutely. Absolutely. And it's true, because I think everyone is probably guilty of this. Maybe only women are guilty of this, but we think that we have, you know, we know, okay, something that we've really worked at, that we've become good at, but the things that we do just naturally that we're the best at, we sometimes just think everybody has that skill, right? Oh, right. That's nothing. I mean, I of course I can organize things into 3 seconds flat. I mean, can't everybody do that? Like, oh, no, right? That's just the way your mind works is so amazing, and you're not even aware of it. And you need someone outside of you to say, what? You know, you can do that. It's an amazing skill.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And sometimes the backdrop with which you're working in, I coached a woman once who was like, oh, well, I just do this, you know, this job for I think it was Nike. So a small portion of Nike's business, but Nike is a multi-billion dollar company. So it's like, okay, it might be small against that backdrop, but if we take that out of that backdrop, this is not small at all, right? You know, several hundred million dollars worth of business is really significant to a whole lot of people. And, you know, and with my background in athletics and manufacturing and fashion, I actually understood that there's so much complexity in what you do. This actually lends itself to multiple different opportunities. And so sometimes just, again, the kind of putting somebody's skill set against a whiteboard rather than than the company that they have known, where it's like maybe they've been pigeonholed. And it's like, well, yeah, I can't seem to get out of this. I'm really good at this one specific thing that works really well for my company. They won't let me do anything else because they love that I do it really well.
Yeah.
I don't really love it. I think I can do this other stuff. And sometimes it's like, okay, well, we just need to reframe the picture of you and then package you and put you in front of the right people.
Yeah, definitely. And that's it. Like, you can only see yourself sometimes as exactly who you are right now. It's sometimes hard to completely throw that away and imagine yourself in a new place. And you do need someone else to help you with that.
Yeah, exactly. It can be really hard.
So Cameron, the obvious question, I guess, that probably everybody wants to know is why did you particularly latch onto this and decide that this was going to be your future? Because I mean, imagine you didn't start doing this at 20, right?
Oh, well, thank you. I didn't. I started my own business when I was, I want to say 48, something like that, around in that period. And I had been in corporate jobs since I was 25. And I had the opportunity with those jobs to live in different countries. I lived in Vietnam, in China, in Germany. I lived in New York when we came back to the US. And now I live in Rhode Island. And in those jobs, it allowed me to see leadership from like several different levels, and in several different cultures and across cultures. And I had some really great examples of leadership that I found super inspiring. And I had some really horrible examples of leadership that was really dismal and really like killed people's spirit. And when I decided ultimately that it was time for me to leave corporate, I had this idea of like, well, maybe one day, maybe in my 50s was my thought, maybe I'll look into coaching and utilize this into some way that might be beneficial for some people. But then I was at the end of my corporate career, I was in a situation where I was in a really toxic work environment and it sucked. I was targeted and it destroyed my confidence, absolutely destroyed it. And I was just like, oh my God, I'm, you know, 40, it was 2019 and I'm 51 now. my math, though I handled multi-million dollar deals, math not so great. But anyway, I when I left, I was initially, I'm just like, oh, well, I'm an operations person. I just want a VP of operations somewhere, or I need to be a director of, head of whatever, because that's who I am. That's what I do. And which is really, really common, because I now know, because we our identity gets so wrapped up in that job. I just like, okay, just replace it. Just plug in something else where I can continue. But my mental health was in the crapper, and my physical health was also starting to do some really weird stuff. I lost the ability to pronounce the letter S. That was shocking and frightening. In 2019, in February, I no longer could say the letter S, and it was like and I was like, what the?
And so random, right?
I mean, so random, so random. I had a complete workup for stroke and all that. I had a wonderful doctor, but it was really freakish. I mean, stress, extreme stress, does some really screwy things to you. And it was through that time. And I had also, in that time where I had been targeted, I asked to be supported with a coach. And I was laughed at by the CEO and head of HR. And they said, we would only do that for the greenest of managers. And I was like, an executive coach? Really? Like, I don't, and I could see this woman's like coloring just go red. And I'm like, I don't want your job, but nothing is working. Like anything I'm doing, like, this is horrible. I'm working so hard. I'm traveling all the time. And then I was like, where do you find a coach? If your company won't support you with a coach, how do you get one? And this was prior to the pandemic. And it was before I was a coach. So now that I am one, I was like, we are everywhere. But when I made the decision to not go into corporate and be like, well, you know, I'm out of this right now. Maybe now is the time to look into this next chapter. And I live right by Brown University. And I just thought, you know, I'd looked at their continuing ed programs before, but I hadn't ever done anything with that yet because I was too busy. Well, in the time that had gone by since I had last looked, they had added a coaching program, and I applied, but one of the prereqs was you had to have a job. And so I wrote a letter and I just said, I don't have a job, but this is why, and this is why I want to be a coach. And it was because I wanted to help other women through that nightmare. I wanted to help them discern, like I was telling you now, why people come to me. I wanted to help them discern, okay, it wasn't actually, I mean, I do have, it wasn't like it was like I had nothing to do with any of it, right? I mean, there now with some perspective and some additional training and some time to reflect, there are definitely things that I could have done differently that would maybe have made the situation better. But I had seen other women be shredded before. But when it was my turn, I didn't leave because it was very insidious, and it just destroyed me. So I became certified in coaching, loved it from minute one of my training because of the neuroscience behind it and the brain plasticity and the fact that we can actually change and learn and create. I mean, you know, now research shows that you have brain plasticity in well into your 90s, as long as you are using it and exercising it and learning new things. And I found that super fascinating. Became a coach. And as I said, my first real target was that woman going through what I had gone through. And I think that we best serve the people that we relate to. And that may not be everybody's case, right? I have coached doctors, and I'm not a doctor, but female doctors, you know, I have coached, you know, executives that are, you know, that are in plastics industry, and not that, but I, you know, again, there's a thread that goes through it. And when I was looking at turning 50, my business was doing really well. And I was really excited about, like, oh my God, I love what I'm doing. I'm making money. I feel like my impact, I felt like an infant. Like, it's like, there's so much opportunity. And I wanted everybody to feel like that. But what I was hearing, because it was during the pandemic, was all these senior level women that were super qualified were saying, they who had been laid off during the pandemic or had to step down to, for elder care or child care or both. We're saying, you know, there might be 50, 55, 58, 60, like I may never work again. And not like a good thing, but like I may never be hired again. And I might have to take a huge step down. And I might have to take a huge cut in pay. And I'm the sole breadwinner. And I was just like, this is insane. The pandemic did not happen to women over 50. What is happening here? And so my focus shifted a bit of like, you know what? This is something. Like, what is happening? And I was also told, I remember being told by someone, well, you know, the most invisible person on earth is the 50-year-old mother. And I just thought, oh my God, like that isn't my experience. And I don't intend for it to be my experience. Or if it is my experience, maybe I'm just blind to it and I don't know. Maybe people really aren't listening to what I have to say, but maybe I'm just lucky enough to not have it shoved around my face. But I have had, you know, guests on my show and I've talked to people where it's so insidious and so literal. They're like, yeah, I'll be in the grocery store line. And the checkout person will go to the person behind me. It's like they don't even see me. And that I just think is, it's not okay. We are a huge portion of the economy, a huge portion of the population. The, you know, people over 50 are by far a larger portion of the population than the population that is coming up beneath us. And so we have to do something about it. So that was a really long answer. I'm sorry. I think you now know my origin, but the origin of my business story. Love to give you a chance to talk.
Well, that's okay. Well, it's interesting. I'm connecting with a lot of what you said, but the part that I really want to focus on is the difference between the feeling that you'd have when you're just saying, oh my God, which is because this is my exact experience, right? 50, I was like, no way. How did this happen? And why am I such a complete loser? Why aren't I living the life I imagined I was going to live? Why aren't I wealthy? Why aren't I, you know, successful? Why am I just living this sort of maudlin, sort of, you know, non-exciting life? Because you just allow yourself to be like slowly, you know, trodden, slowly sort of beaten down. And the difference between that and finding something that you're really passionate about and that lights you up and suddenly that's why you are not invisible is because you've got that light, you've got that fire. And so you just show up differently, right? I mean, we don't even realize sometimes that we're just like, oh, you know, and people would just like, oh, that person's not, you know, they're not relevant. I'm going to move on to the next person who's more vibrant and more exciting. And, you know, your energy is just depleting, but it's not because of age, right? We're told constantly, oh, you know, now that you're 50 and I hear people say it and you're right. Not just 50. Mm. Now that I'm 40, now that I'm this age, you know, it's just like age is such a number. It's such an irrelevant thing. You know, I'm sure that this could happen to you. You could stand next to someone who's 10, 20 years younger, and people would think that you were the younger one because you're energetic, you're dynamic, you know, you just, right? There's an inner fire that just transforms your entire life. And I'm excited that you're helping people to tap into that because it's so incredibly powerful.
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that we have to be really careful of as women in society is that we face ageism pretty much from the get-go. And it's almost hard to figure out, to discern what's sexism, what's ageism. But, you know, when I talk to people, it's like, well, in your 20s, you're too young. Then, you know, and you're the girl, right? And, you know, you're the coffee girl, you're the accounting girl, you're the whatever, the secretary girl, whatever. And it's just like, okay, that sucks. And then you get to like late 20s, 30s. Oh God, is she going to have some kids? How many is she going to have? Is she going to need time off? And then you're like end of, you know, late 30s, 40. And it's like, ah, you know what? We really want fresh blood. We want somebody who can relate to our consumer better. You know, and then you're 50 and you're just like, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Checked out. She's checked out. She's mailing it in until she retires. And it's just like, holy crap. And we have to be really, really careful not to buy into that and to not age ourselves too, because I had definitely myself, you know, after 40, my eyesight started going weird, right? It's like I started doing things with menus that I'd seen my mother do for years. And I was just like, this is freaking crazy, right? What is happening? It was, and so I would say, oh, yeah, yeah, can't see anything, you know? And it's just like kind of solidifying that idea. And yes, some stuff happens physically that does happen with age, right? That's like, but which is a really great incentive to take care of yourself and do all of your regular checkups and do what you can. Not to
gravity is a
aging.
Thing, right? But
right, exactly. Not to fight aging, but to just be healthy. Totally, exactly. And so I think that part of it is, you know, just that it is really a number. I know some super young, super vibrant 75-year-olds. One of my guests on my show wrote her first and published her first book at 72. I love that. I absolutely love that. And the number of women who have started major, major businesses after 50 is tremendous. I mean, Martha Stewart, and we all know who Martha Stewart is, right? Her big break, her big business was 50. You know, that was when we really started going. So there is something very truthful about what society may say, but also what you're saying about yourself and what you are accepting from what you hear and what others may expect. Because to what you described initially, right, of that kind of like trudging drudgery type of feel of just like, you know, where you're not necessarily fueling yourself, nobody else is likely, right? There's a good freaking chance nobody else is helping to fuel you and be like your cheerleader. And so it's really easy to kind of, yeah, okay, well, nobody else seems to think I'm great. I'm not going to invest in myself. I'm not going to spend money on that. I'm not going to, you know, what does it matter what I wear or do or how I show up? Nobody's going to notice me anyway. And it's, you know, that is, you know, if you are in that space and if you're having those thoughts or if you've said that, or it's like, you know, I haven't done anything for myself since I had children. And I hear that often, right? And it's like, oh, you know, we tell mothers all the time, you got to take care of yourself. Businesses tell people now all the time, take care of your mental health, make sure you take your time off. But if it's not supported with the actual, like negative consequences, right? Like if it's like, yes, take care of your mental health, by the way, all the same shit needs to be done while you're gone. And I know that we didn't let you backfill those two positions that we cut last year. So yeah, but take care of your mental health. You know, if you're not given the tools, it's really hard to make yourself a priority. And so you have to really fight for yourself and really come to terms with like, okay, if nobody else is going to do this, where do I start? What do I want? What do I need to be vibrant and perky? What are they even talking about? Right? So give me a freaking cup of coffee. Clean this freaking house and let me get through my 2 million emails and, yeah, you know, and go to my 6,000 meetings. And yeah.
But you're right. What you sort of, I mean, you said it, but you didn't emphasize it. And I want to emphasize it that I think as women that so here's an example. I'm at the gym this morning mm-hmm. and I'm like, I'm not like cleaning the bathroom, but you know, there were just some things that were, you know, there was like a paper towel on the floor and, you know, I'm picking it up and there's like, why, right? Is it my responsibility to clean the gym? But I mean, we do that in business as well, right? Like you say, oh, we laid off your two people who were helping you, but that's okay. I'll just pick up the slack. I'll just work longer. And, you know, I don't think it's out of like, I think it's out of a desire that we have this, we can fix things. We want to make things work. You know, it's not a problem. You know, we're not going to stand up and ask for help. Whereas a man would be like, I mean, this again, huge generalization. We're not here to,
right,
you know, kick men down or whatever. But I think many, many people, and some of them maybe younger women, maybe men of other ages, or maybe everybody except me, but would stand up and say, excuse me, you're asking me to do X, you're going to need to do this, right? We're not telling people you need to give me this if you're expecting this result. We're just saying, you know, like, okay, yeah, well, you know, this didn't get done. Let me just really quickly do it. And this didn't get done and I'll just take care of that. And, you know, it's like, because we're used to, I mean, I don't have kids, but I'm still cleaning up other people's bathrooms. So you explain it, you know, I think it's just some kind of inbred, innate thing that we just you know, we're going to take care of people. We're going to fix this thing for other people and make life easier for them, instead of looking and saying, what is going to make life easier for me? And maybe that's what happens when we start to turn 50, is like, hey, you know, you all can just suck it, because I need
totally.
Right. I'm going to worry about what's going to make me happy, what's going to make me want to do stuff. And people are like, wow, she's bitchy.
I used to talk to a lot of women who absolutely get that attitude 50 over. They're just like, screw you. I am done. But I think there's something to celebrate about that, right? Because it takes a lot of guts to get there. Even if they are that, they probably had to work through something or shed some layers of expectation. And part of it is such a freaking relief, right? It's just like, oh my God, it's so nice to not have to work. You know, it's like, okay, the measurement of success for me is no longer what I weigh, right? And that's super, you know, that is one example and super artificial, but it was a lot of my life of like, okay, was I, you know, did I look a certain way? Did I show up a certain way? Did, you know, could I eat this? Could I not eat that? Because it was so conditioned, you know, I grew up in the freaking 90s, you know, where Victoria's Secret catalog came in, and it was just like, oh my God, I have to be 9 feet tall and weigh 75 pounds with really big boobs. And it's just like, oh my goodness. Terrible.
Yeah.
And
the
so
Barbie
it's really nice.
Right? Like, this is really
thing. And so it's super nice to be like, you know, yeah, I want to be healthy, but I am not the person that doesn't have dessert. I'm not that person. Any of my friends will attest to that. It's like, Right. Yeah, of course I'm going to have that.
Exactly. I'll gladly give up dinner so I can have two desserts.
Eat it first while you're hungry. It's like a cinnamon roll. I will always eat the middle first. I might be full by the time I get to the nasty outside. I'm not going to start there and save it.
Exactly. Which, you know, get the good stuff.
Which might, you know, probably explains, I'm sure that the marshmallow, somebody that knows about the marshmallow experiment's probably like, oh God, she probably ate the marshmallow when she was a kid, didn't she? She didn't wait.
Immediate gratification. That's my
right. And that's, you know, clearly with all of your expertise in money, right? It's like there does have to be some, can't all be immediate gratification. There does have to be some pullback in some of that. Marrying an incredibly tight man helped me understand some of that, of like, oh, okay, yeah, maybe it does make sense. At first I really railed against it, and I still do sometimes, but we're, you know, in that way, it's like, yeah, of course, moderation, whether it's in food or whether it's in spending, is very healthy.
Well, so the marshmallow experiment, and I think about how I would have done this, right? The marshmallow experiment, for people who aren't familiar with it, is they ask children, and I don't know what age, but young kids, mm-hmm. would you, if you don't eat this, so here's a marshmallow. If you don't eat it now, you know, later I'll give you two marshmallows, right? So if you'll postpone your gratification of the fun of eating this marshmallow, later on you'll have twice as much. And it seemed there was a correlation between kids who didn't eat the second, you know, who waited to get the marshmallow and their success later in life.
Exactly.
But like, now I'm more of a negotiator. I would be like, well, what happens if I only eat half the marshmallow?
Oh my God, I love that.
Right. So I, you know, can
Where's
I get
the gray area?
Another, right. So there are a lot of different layers to this. And how much do you actually like marshmallows? Maybe it's just the kids that don't like marshmallows that much are more successful. Like, it might just be a sugar thing. I mean, but there, it does have to be, right? You can't constantly postpone that gratification. You can't constantly put it to the future, because then that's the person who's 85 years old and who won't go on vacation, right? Because they want to, well, I just, you know, what happens if I live to be 130? I got to have money, you know? So
yes.
Yeah. There has to be, you have to enjoy today. And I hope that's happening to us in our 50s, is saying, you know what? Screw it. I'm eating that marshmallow.
Yeah. If you like marshmallows, eat them, you know?
Eat it.
Yeah.
Do it.
And I think too about that I have no idea what I would have done when I was younger. I'm guessing now, well, who knows? I haven't been in that experiment, but then I think what comes to my mind is, oh my God, how many ADHD kids were in that experiment, you know, or non-neurotypical kids were in that experiment. And was that known? And like, what did that mean? Were they successful in a really different way? Which, I mean, we could debate that all day, but it's really interesting, you know? And I think you said something earlier about taking care of cleaning bathrooms and taking care of other stuff that has nothing to do with us and picking up slack at the office, in business. And we are often the ones that are asked to do, oh, well, you know, Cameron, you'll chair the company party, right? Like you can do that, right? And it's just like, oh yeah, blah, blah, you know, or much worse, you know, I remember one of my guests and a friend was, she made it to the boardroom, super excited to have made it to, you know, in the boardroom. And her first meeting with men and, no, she was the only woman, but with men that she respected, she went in there and they said, well, you'll take the notes, right? And she said she was so stunned that that was the expectation. She's like, I didn't say, oh, well, sure. But then, you know, Josh can do it next week, right? Like that we must take turns with this, or, you know, piss off, or what, are you kidding? You know, she's like, I just did it. And that is, you know, the conditioned expectation is really, really strong. And there is, I think, something too about, especially if it's, something's not backfilled, or if there's extra work that needs to be done. I think that especially if we haven't been recently promoted, but maybe had success when we were younger, and you have that can-do attitude, right? It's just like, oh, well, yeah, this will give me more visibility. I'll do this because maybe this will prove that I'm ready for next. And it's like, oh crap, that so often freaking backfires. And maybe sometimes when it's strategic, maybe that can help, because there is something about, yeah, you got to do more than just what's on your job description if you're going to succeed, whether you're a man or a woman. But you also, I liked what you said about, you know, a man may say, and again, broad swaths, sweeping swaths of generalizations for women and men here, but it may be more likely, I really liked what you said, being like, well, yeah, I can do that, but like, let's talk compensation and let's talk expectations now, you know, and if they're like, oh, well, you know, we'll talk to you in a year, see if you do it. It's like, yeah, no. That is, you know, that's not a foot up the ladder. That is a foot in cement. You know, it's like, you got to get it in writing.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's going to be in 6 months and exactly what the terms will be, you know, okay, well, what then? And if they're not willing to play ball, so to speak, start looking. Just start looking, because they're likely not going to promote you.
Well, and if there's one thing that is a recurring theme in women who I work with and coach, and that is learning, because it's not a natural talent, learning how to say no.
Oh,
when
yeah.
People ask you to do things, I said that your first answer should be no. And then you can always come back and say, well, let's talk about what's involved or whatever. But, you know, you valuing your own time makes people respect you more. If people can just keep heaping things on you, and they, oh, she's got nothing to do. It's when you're pushing back and you're saying no, and you're saying, you know, certainly how many, you know, I'll absolutely, I can do that. I'll need two more staff members. What, you know, shall we get started hiring them? You know, like ways to say no in a way that is not like, screw you. No, I'm not doing that. Right. It's
right.
Not the bitchy way of saying no. It's like, you know, oh, I'd be happy to. I'll just need, you know, this, I'll just need this in order to do that. Or yes. And what would you like to take off my plate so that I can do this thing that I agree I'm infinitely superior. You know, I'm the right choice to do that job. So here are some things I'm going to offload to someone else who's the right person to offload them to. Right.
Yeah.
Just like, but at the end of the day, it's like, heck no.
Yes.
It's like,
negotiation.
No.
Yeah, exactly. And not just like, yeah, as you're walking down the hall and then it registers later on. It's like, oh my God, can't do that. I don't want to do that. I don't even want to. You know, oh, there's an excellent excerpt from a book that Nancy Collier wrote called, her book is titled The Emotionally Exhausted Woman. And she was at, I think she was a guest, she and a friend, maybe they went on a trip together. And Nancy got up and she was like, you know, I thought maybe we could like, you know, go on a bike ride and, you know, and see the town. And her friend was just like, yeah, no thanks. And she's, well, why not? And the friend just said, because I don't want to, I don't like riding bikes. And Nancy was just like, oh my God, This was one of the first women that she had heard just say, no, I don't want to. I don't like that. And she's like, and she was still my friend. She wasn't rude. She's like riding, didn't like riding bikes. Didn't mean I couldn't ride a bike. Didn't mean that we couldn't find something we'd both like to do together. Right. It didn't mean anything right. other than she didn't like riding bikes. And I thought it was, I think it is really great. And she also did a lot of research that shows that, you know, we start like picking up that slack, saying yes when we don't want to. Oh, we start doing it a lot right around middle school. And it is that time when we are defining ourselves, sort of, but we also so desperately want to be liked and brought into the fold of the group. You know, if being ourselves makes us separate and different, we will let go of that, which is, again, if you go back millennia, right, it's survival instinct. Stay with the herd. Don't get left behind. But it is such a, that kind of stuff that it goes on and just multiplies and multiplies in so many different ways. And all of a sudden we're pleasers and we're saying yes when we want to say no. We're saying yes when we don't have time. We're saying yes when we don't have resources. And I love the approach that you just shared, which was from a negotiation point of power. And I absolutely have respected colleagues and employees at time when they're like, you know, oh, well, I can do this, but you know what, on whatever Tuesdays, I leave at 4. I have to leave at 4 on Tuesdays because I take a yoga class. My kid plays baseball. You know, I had one woman say to me, I have an eyelash appointment, a standing eyelash appointment. I was just like, there was really something I have to say. For a moment, I was really taken aback. I'm like, seems odd. But frankly, the working hours of that business were 7 to 4. I had no right to, she could do whatever she wanted, you know, but I was also conditioned of, well, who really leaves at 4? Come on. That was my,
are you really telling me that your eyebrows are more important than this work?
Right. But frankly, it's none of my dang business, right? She could have said, I have a standing appointment at the wine bar with my best friend and that we do tastings. It's not my business. And it's, you know, and I think that, you know, when you put a stake in the ground and if, as long as it's not like I'm leaving midday at 2, you know, during normal work hours of this business operation to do something just because I want to, if I don't have flexibility in my work, then okay, that might be not work. But I think when people say, when they put a stake in the ground, I will actually coach people when they start a new job. Sometimes the trap is, it's like, okay, this first 3 months, right? The first 90 days, they really are important. I mean, like they really are important, but it's also the time where you are setting the tone for the rest of your time there. And so if you go into it with, I'm just going to kick ass no matter what these first 90 days so that I prove to them that I'm worthy, they are not ever going to expect anything less. And when you're there at 9 at night, they're going to expect it. And so if there are times that if you've made a commitment to your family or to your fitness or to whatever it is, you really need to say it, because most of the times people are like, yeah, okay, you can't be here. You know, you have to leave at 4:30 on Wednesdays. Okay. You know, and then you set it up that way.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a lot easier to say no up front. It's a lot easier just to set the tone and be like, this is how we work together. This is how we're going to work together. I've got these rules. You've got your own rules. And you know, you're setting the stage, right? It's just like, it's hard to come back from that. Like you say, suddenly like, what's she doing going home at 5 o'clock? She was always here till 9, you know? And I feel like I actually had a job like that where, I mean, I did my work and then I was ready to go. And my boss, who loved to be there till 9 o'clock, said that I should be helping other people to do their job. I'm like, why?
Yeah. And it's sometimes hard to go against the grain, right? It's like, well, but actually, I was pretty efficient with my work and I planned my time really well. Or,
yeah, you know, and I'm really organized and I get shit done I'm going to be penalized for that.
Right.
Why?
My working moms that worked for me when I lived in New York, my working moms, holy moly, they were the most efficient workers that I had. And they may struggle with getting in at an exact time, depending on how pickup and nannies and whatever, how Once you have kids, you never know. It's kind of a crapshoot how mornings are going to go. But once they were there, they were never the ones. They were never looking at their social media. They were never the ones chit-chatting around. And because they would get in, they would do their job, and they would leave on time. They had to, because their kid would be standing out on the street, you know, if they didn't. And they were fantastic. I mean, it was
focused.
It was a difference.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. So have we solved the world's problems, Cameron? Are like women over 50 are now empowered to say no, do your thing. If your job isn't recognizing you, kick it to the curb and call Cameron and be like, hey, I want to start my own business. I want to do my own thing. I want to be appreciated. I'm sick of this BS. I'm taking the world by storm. Look out, everybody.
Exactly. I mean, if we haven't solved all the problems, we're well on our way.
Well on our way. Absolutely. Cameron, I'm going to in a minute ask you how people can reach you. But first, I want to ask you if there are any other questions that you wish I would have asked you that I didn't think of.
You know, I don't think so. This was absolutely lovely. It was absolutely lovely. And if people that are listening were like, oh, I wish they would have talked about this, they were just about to and didn't, feel free to reach out. This was really wonderful. And I appreciate being a guest. I appreciate being able to share. And yeah, thank you.
Cameron, the pleasure was all mine. I love talking to you. I'm happy that we could relive this experience or
recreate.
Not working yet this morning. To have this experience again and revive, I don't know, whatever the word is. But yeah, happy that we are meeting up again, that we're getting a chance to chat again. If people are like, yes, this is it, I'm ready. What's the best way for people to reach you? And also make sure you tell them where to hear the podcast.
Oh, well, thank you so much. So the podcast, it's on all platforms. It's called 50, Not Dead. And it was created to give a platform for women over 50. I have no shortage of guests because women want to talk about this stuff. It's been my absolute honor to host this show. I love it. So that's on all platforms, wherever you listen to your normal podcasts. If you're interested in, you know, just knowing more about me, what I'm doing, I post often on LinkedIn. My Cameron Erickson Huban is my LinkedIn name. I was an Erickson before, so half my professional world knows me that way. And if you're interested in working with me, you can go to my website. It's www.cameronhuban.com. And you're welcome to, or on LinkedIn, send me a DM. Those are probably the easiest ways. I'd love to have a conversation. If you're kind of like, okay, I'm stuck and I'm really ready for change, but I don't know where to start. That's where my secret sauce is, and that's what gets me excited. So please feel free. And Christine, thank you so much.
Oh, thank you, Cameron. And I'm sure you can tell by listening to Cameron that she's going to receive you with grace and honor and support and love and help you to make the right decisions and in a beautiful way. Cameron, thank you so much for being with us today. All of the links to reach Cameron will be in the show notes. Thank you so much for listening, and I'll see you next week.